Hello and welcome to CICK News. CICK News is your local and regional news coverage provided by me, Pamela Hassan, and Dan Messick for Smithers Community Radio. This news program is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada, and our aim is to provide local coverage on stories that affect the lives of Northerners like you. Today on CICK News, a UNBC research project funded by the Pacific Institute for Climate Solutions will connect people and community leaders with information and real-time data to help them adapt to climate change impacts. This project is built around community adaptation and resilience, and I'm speaking to Dr. Joseph Shea, UNBC Associate Professor in the Department of Geography, Earth and Environmental Sciences, and the project's principal investigator. Before that, though, I spoke to Smithers Town Councillor and Deputy Mayor Frank Ray about smart water usage and conservation plan for Smithers Town residents. What is the current restriction on water usage in Smithers now?
So it's a level one restriction. Basically, on odd days, if your address is odd, you can water. And on even days, if your address is even, you can water, and you're not supposed to water if it's not your day.
What impacts does it have if people do adhere to a schedule like this?
Well, it helps to make sure that our aquifer isn't being taxed too heavily during the summer. As you know, it hasn't rained much at all this year. We're not really, the aquifer is underground and we've never tested it, but I don't really think we want to test it by using water when we don't need to.
How is the town managing the balance between a very dry July and then also this water restriction?
Well, the water restriction is actually in effect from, I believe, early June. Every year we have this on. Mostly when we passed the bylaw, it was mostly to get people used to the idea that we may have to conserve water. And, you know, this is the kind of year that might test that. There are some tips on our website, but generally speaking, you know, things like rain barrels and stuff, but now obviously if it's not raining, you can't use your rain barrel. There's a few things like if we were to go to a phase two, then you have to water by hand and with something that can actually shut off. You can't just willy-nilly your hose or put a sprinkler on. You can still water your vegetable gardens, but you have to do it by hand and things like that. And we've never got to discussing anything beyond that. I think it would have to be pretty bad. We're pretty blessed with our aquifer, but you never know.
As of yesterday, BC Wildfire Service crews will be conducting a small-scale hand ignition on the Powers Creek wildfire. This ignition will take place on a small island of fuel to reduce the spotting potential of the fire and to help mop up operations. Residents can expect to see smoke today while this ignition takes place. The Regional District of Bulkley-Nechako has rescinded the evacuation order, though the evacuation alert remains in place. The BC Wildfire Service is responding to the Peacock Creek wildfire located 6 kilometers from the district of Houston. A wind shift has caused this fire to push to the east and grow substantially to an estimated 250 hectares. This fire is exhibiting continuous crown with an organized flame front and is spotted 400 meters ahead of itself. Air tankers responded yesterday afternoon but were unable to effectively slow the growth. Multiple resources have been assigned. The fire is highly visible to Highway 16 and to the surrounding communities. The Regional District of the Bulkley-Nechako has issued an evacuation order for rural properties and recreational assets within the vicinity. For more information on evacuation orders and alerts, please visit the Regional District of Bulkley-Nechako website at rdbn.bc.ca. And now here's my interview with Dr. Shea.
My name's Dr. Joseph Shea. I'm an associate professor at the University of Northern British Columbia.
And where am I speaking to you from?
Well, I'm currently in Canmore, Alberta, but I live in Prince George, BC.
Okay. Could you describe what snowpack is?
Sure. Snowpack is just the accumulation of snow in the wintertime. So that's it. It's how much snow we get, where it sits on the landscape. And part of what we're also interested in is how it melts, and that snow melt then feeds rivers and streams and things like that into the spring and summertime.
Your research with the mountain community, adaptation to changing snowpacks and geohazards, what is the nature of your work with that research?
Well, that's part of the investigation. So, you know, we know that one of the consequences of climate change is a changing mountain snowpack. And that will vary from place to place. It'll vary with, how high your mountains are or how close you are to the ocean, all these sorts of things that influence the snowpack. But we're interested in those links. Does a changing mountain snowpack affect geohazards? Or are the frequency of these geohazards expected to change in response to other weather events, like intense precipitation, intense rainfall? But in this area of the world, the Robson Valley, there's also some suggestion that it's freeze-thaw cycles in the spring, right? That leads to too much water in the soils, and then we get these sort of mass movement events happening, these geohazards. There's an intimate link there between the snowpack and the geohazards as well.
Yeah. What are some of the ways that communities in northern BC are vulnerable to these geohazards and changing mountain snowpacks?
Well, I think some of them, in some cases, there's a direct vulnerability, like there's a potential that one of these events could affect the town directly or the village directly. In the Robson Valley, that's not an immediate concern, not yet anyways, but we're more focusing on the secondary impacts. What happens if a landslide takes out the main power line that connects Vail Mount to the rest of BC? What happens if the highway gets completely blocked and the community's stuck for days or possibly weeks as things get cleared, right? So identifying these potential secondary hazards and vulnerabilities is something that we're focusing on here in the Robson Valley.
Who are you speaking to gather information about how the climate change is affecting snowpacks, but also again, just kind of the communities? Who are you speaking to gather that information for this research?
Well, we've just started the project, and so far we've spoken to the community leaders. So the mayor of Vail Mount, the regional district manager, Danielle Allen, and these people have, that sort of bigger perspective on things, and they're aware of what's sort of filtering up to them in the community. But one of the things we also want to do is get out and have, semi-structured interviews with people and talk to them about their experiences, particularly if they've lived in the valley for a longer period of time and they have a bit more perspective on it. It's a 3-year funding project, and there'll probably be ongoing work afterwards, maintaining if there's stations that we put up in the mountains and we make sure they're just transmitting data back to the communities in real time.
Is there a plan or something tangible that you're hoping that this research will produce at the end of it? Maybe a new approach to emergency preparedness?
Well, that's a good question. I think this is my first experience doing this kind of work, and I really do hope that it can be a bit of a template for other communities who might be interested in this sort of approach. A really collaborative effort in the sense that, we're coming in there as university researchers, but we really want to listen to people to hear what they're saying, what their concerns are, and then use that to inform the science that we do. Often it goes the other way. So at the end, we kind of want to have a product that people in the region can access and take a look at. Maybe this is like a web portal, like all the information that we can collect is available and, an easy to digest format. So it's, map-based understanding of the different vulnerabilities that are identified, and maybe there's information sources like real-time data that's going to be sourced there as well. So you can click on it and see what the snowpack looks like that winter, something like that. So we want to have tangible benefits for the people in the community. And maybe the biggest one is an actual, emergency response plan that is informed by these vulnerabilities to geohazards. One of the things that we're not doing is predicting, right? We can't go out there and say, well, this is going to happen. That's not really the goal of the project, but it's to sort of, identify events that have happened in the past, what triggered those events, and then taking a look scientifically to see, well, how are those triggers going to change in the future? What's the possibility that we might see more frequent events or bigger events or less events? Or it's sort of up in the air at this point, but a big suspicion is that as the mountain snowpacks change, we will see changes in the frequency of these sort of mass movement events. So
Yeah.
it's not something that people can, clear the brush around their houses and make
Yeah.
fire smart approaches, but it's also informing how prepared do you have to be, right? What sort of So I lived in Kathmandu for a couple of years, and the first
Wow.
thing someone told me when I moved there was, you should be ready for a big earthquake, and you should be prepared to be self-sufficient for 2 weeks, which was a like I was like, whoa, that's intense, but it actually came true when we had the big earthquake in Nepal. So, but understanding what the possibilities are, you know, if the community does get shut off, what do you need to do to just manage that and adapt to it? So those sorts of things are what we hope the community can get out of this.
Yeah, but it's pretty relevant to any of the listeners in Smithers, because this weekend we were kind of all waiting for possibly an evacuation order due to a forest fire at Powers Creek. And so I think it really kind of made a lot of people pay a little closer attention to, like, what does your bug out bag look like? How prepared are you if you need to, you know, move yourself and your family quickly? So I think that definitely being prepared for any emergency, including something that's not just fire, is something that I think a lot of us are thinking about.
Oh, absolutely. And that one hits home close for me too, because I actually had a former student get evacuated by that order south of Smithers. And as soon as I saw the news, I messaged him. He's like, yep, we got evacuated last night. So being prepared, being ready to go. And you know, it's dangerous because you don't want to walk around worrying that something's always going to happen. But I think being prepared just makes you a little more comfortable with it.
Absolutely. Just circling back to this research project here, are you doing kind of like an online survey or anything, or are you more pointedly asking? I mean, I know that you said you're speaking to community leaders, but I mean, will that spread out into more of the members of the community? Something online that people should be aware of or looking out for?
Yeah, I think we'll probably do both. It's still being sort of sussed out and defined. It's one of the grad students' project is going to be identifying, you know, the best ways to meet with people. And some of it might be online, but I think in person is also really important, right? But I think we'll have to move into more structured kind of interview formats to really solidify the information that we're getting and collect it in a format that's usable.
Absolutely.
But I think, you know, this is potentially a template for other communities to work with. And I know the province has also sort of launched a new tool for this sort of thing. So I think, you know, if Smithers hasn't done this yet already, or the Bulkley Valley, but there's an opportunity to really open this up and take this model of community up kind of research into other places, especially mountain communities that are, you know, at risk to things like this.
Thanks again for tuning in to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at skeenastrong.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks again to our producer, Pam Hassan, and all of our roving reporters. I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.